Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Kia ora, welcome to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast and thanks for tuning in this week. I'm your host Jordan, I'm a mum of one, soon to be two boys and a lover of all things birth and a very passionate storyteller. The goal of Kiwi Birth Tales is to empower, inform, educate and connect families from New Zealand and all over the world, talking about the things that are so often kept to ourselves or shared with only our nearest and dearest because of this taboo that seems to surround sharing stories about birth. All stories deserve to be heard, no story more important than the other, and with this podcast you'll get a variety without bias. The podcast is not intended for medical advice. I'm not an advocate for any particular mode of birth or birth care, and this platform is simply here to share these beautiful, empowering Kiwi birth tales with you all. So I hope you enjoy. In this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales, I speak with Alice, and Alice takes us through her pregnancy and birth story with her little son, Leo. And Alice's story is pretty relevant at the moment because if you are living in New Zealand, we have gone back into level 4 lockdown, and Alice actually gave birth last year in level 4 lockdown. So some really interesting pieces of information and insights in Alice's story. And yeah, I guess I hope that if you're out there, whatever stage you are in your pregnancy, you find this story interesting and helpful. And yeah, maybe you even take some tips from it. My only reminder is that all DHBs in New Zealand are different, so all have different rules and regulations, and what happened for Alice might be different in your DHB. So just a reminder to check in with your midwife. If you're worried or concerned about anything, then she's the best person to talk to about the regulations in your DHB, and hopefully, that will help ease any anxieties. But my heart's just going out to every single person, whatever stage of your journey that you're on at the moment. I think lockdown isn't easy for anyone. So yeah, just sending heaps of positive vibes and lots of love out there today with this episode. Alice talks us through her LGA baby. So he was measuring 10 pounds 10, I believe they estimated, and her decision to have an elective cesarean section under level 4 lockdown last year. She then talks through the postpartum period, including her partner leaving hospital, which is just a super emotional part of the episode. So a pre-warning there that you might need your tissues. And then she talks us through, their postpartum period, birth care, heading home, some positives of being in lockdown at that sort of stage, and then some difficulties that she had with breastfeeding. And then she also takes us through secondary infertility. So her and her partner Ben have been trying to fall pregnant for the better part of a year now, and it was discovered that she has a C-section defect, so on her scar, a defect. So she talks us through that and what that process has been like and what happens for her now. So a really jam-packed episode, and I hope that you find something useful in it, or something resonates with you, or you just really enjoy listening. So I hope that you get a little bit of a break whenever you get the chance to listen to this episode. And like I said earlier, just sending lots of love and positive vibes. Okay, let's jump into the episode. Hi, Alice. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hey, Jordan. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
All good. Thank you.
That's good. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yep. So I'm Alice, and I live in Auckland with my partner Ben and our little boy Leo.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And you guys are surviving lockdown?
Yep, level 4.
Yeah.
Life with a toddler, it's awesome.
Cool. And I know that we're obviously here to talk about your story, which is quite related because you had a lockdown birth last year. So I'd love for you to take us through what the journey was like to pregnancy for you guys, first of all.
So we I guess I was on the pill for I think roughly 13 years, and then came off it and actually had a Mirena inserted, which only lasted about a year. And then Ben and I thought, because I'd been on contraception for so long, it would take quite a while to get pregnant. That's kind of like always what I'd heard, or maybe like a myth that I'd, thought of. So we were like, we do want to have babies soon, and maybe we could get my body ready and get all the hormone balancing happening and all that stuff. So came off the got the Mirena taken out and let my body kind of heal for about 6 months, I think, and was just tracking my ovulation and cycles with just an app. And avoiding getting pregnant, I guess. And then when the time was right, we were kind of like, should we start trying? It might take ages. So, yeah, it was like I was ovulating that weekend and we did it and we got pregnant. So, one, like straight away, which was a huge shock. And we just were kind of just like staggered by that, like, what the hell? But pretty fortunate and was pretty amazing to get pregnant that quickly.
Awesome. And how did you find out that you were pregnant? Did you have any symptoms or take a test? What happened
I started doing really silly things.
there?
I actually left my handbag in a cafe.
Oh, no.
and we were driving away from the cafe, and then I was like, "Oh my God, my handbag!" And so we drove back, got the handbag, like it was all fine, but just really random, stupid things like that, just forgetful stuff. And I was like, "This is weird. I'm just, not kind of myself." Didn't feel sick or anything like that. Just really silly things. So. I think my period was about 2 days late. So not crazy, but just thought, but also in the back of my mind, I just thought there's no way we could get pregnant in the first pop, So, I did a test and, yeah, there it was.
Awesome. And how was your first trimester? Did you have many pregnancy sort of symptoms that popped up in those first 12 weeks?
I was pretty nauseous, but actually no vomiting. So just like the sweaty hands and mouth full of saliva, but like nothing would come out. And that kind of went on for like maybe the first 14 weeks. Just getting real nauseous and just felt like I was going to spew, but nothing would actually eventuate. But yeah, no, pretty standard and just okay, I'm pregnant, so it wasn't like a rough ride that first trimester, no.
Awesome. And did you choose a midwife for your care?
No, we actually went through a team of obstetricians here on the shore. And yeah, so it was just like a team of six obstetricians that you kind of just rotate through. Where every time you see them, you see a different one, which was quite nice. You get to know them that way. And then the aftercare, you are assigned with a midwife. So
Awesome.
yeah.
Cool. And what about your second and third trimester? So, did you do all of the sort of standard testing that's offered in New Zealand, and did you end up finding out the sex of your baby?
Yeah, so did all the gestational diabetes tests, my results came back fine. Like I didn't have it. But it was really interesting. One of the obstetricians actually wanted me to retest it because I was carrying such a big baby.
Right.
That she was kind of like, I'd like you to do this in 6 weeks' time. But I actually was really naughty and I never did it again because it was so disgusting.
Oh, no, yeah.
So I was a bit naughty. So, but honestly, the second trimester was a dream. I just had so much energy and just felt a bit like me again and just started, I could eat chicken and... Because first trimester, all that kind of stuff made me feel so sick.
Yeah.
So it was fine. It was really good. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when in your pregnancy did we end up going into lockdown as a country? What stage were you at then?
I was 37 weeks pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the announcement was made for level 4.
Yeah.
And they were so strict with like the information that was coming out was just pretty intense for pregnant women. No partners were allowed at scans.
Yeah.
So all that sort of thing was done on your own. All your like obstetrician appointments or midwife appointments, your partner could not come with you.
Yeah.
So I remember Ben kind of just sitting in the car park waiting and then having to come back and tell him the news of, you know, changes or anything like that. So that was a little tough. Our whole plan for Leo was at 38 weeks, because we knew he was so big, he was always in the 98th percentile, or even off the chart. So his tummy, like, it didn't even read on the chart. It was too big. So they always kind of had said to me, as we get closer to your due date, what kind of scan is it?
A growth scan?
Yes, a growth scan. Yep. We'll do a growth scan at 38 weeks and we'll kind of make a plan as to how we're going to get the baby out. Like if we're going to induce me or that sort of thing. So that I kind of had in my back of my mind, you know, even though he was a big baby, we kind of would have a plan.
Yeah.
And then at 37 weeks, we went into lockdown. And my obstetrician said that there are no scans, no unnecessary scans. So I was like, oh dear, like what are we going to do now? So 38 weeks passed and we didn't get to do that growth scan. And then at 39 weeks, I was like, I'd be quite keen for a stretch and sweep. to get things going, you know, and so I went for one of them, and obviously nothing happened, and they were like, no, there's no kind of movement in that department.
And then
the weeks just rolled by and no Leo. So that was pretty annoying, but yeah, we just kind of kept going weeks on and weeks kept rolling by. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you do, I guess before lockdown, did you do any like antenatal classes or birth education or anything like that in sort of preparation for your birth?
Yes. So we went to, I think it was like 6 classes on a Wednesday night for antenatal classes.
Yeah.
Which were awesome. We had the most incredible teacher. She was just so honest and Everything that she talked about was just kind of like, oh, okay, wow. You know, you don't hear about these sorts of things. But it was kind of really focused on the labor and the pregnancy and the stages that we were all in. Nothing was really touched on about postpartum.
Yeah.
Which I, at the time, I was oblivious to, you know, I never knew kind of really what was coming. It was just kind of like, right, how do we get the baby safely born, you know, and how to bath the baby, but nothing really, you know, none of the big stuff.
And so did that give you any thoughts on, like, I know you said you ended up trying a stretch and sweep, so were you initially planning to have a vaginal birth, or what were your thoughts around sort of like a birth plan?
Yeah. To be honest, I never had a birth plan. Like, I was kind of just like, I trust these professionals, and if they think, you know, that this baby's going to be really big, and their guidance would be to be induced, then I'm all for it and I'm keen for a vaginal birth. Yep. But if they also think that a better route would be for an elective C-section, then I'm keen for that too. So yeah. I was super open. I never kind of had anything against pain relief or, you know, I'm all for that kind of thing. So
yeah.
Yeah, real open-minded about how he was going to come, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And do you want to take us through, I guess, that final sort of week before you had him? And I know that we were in level four, so what were they giving you sort of, I guess, in preparation for what your plan might be, and if you got to 42 weeks, or, yeah, what sort of happened later on in that final stage of pregnancy?
Yeah, so by 39 weeks, I'd had two stretch and sweeps, and nothing had happened again. And so I was pretty impatient, and it's level four lockdown. You can't see anyone. You can't, you know, I can't go for walks with my friends, or, you know, meet my mum for coffee, or anything that I dreamed of my final just me time, you know. That was kind of all gone, so I think heaps of anxiety happened, you know, or grew from being in level four. And the uncertainty of having a baby, and also the uncertainty of what was happening in the world with the pandemic. So it was pretty scary, pretty scary place to be in my head, but I was kind of like, let's just get this baby out, like, hurry up now. So had another stretch and sweep at 40 weeks.
Yeah.
So now that's my total of three stretch and sweeps. and I just remember the obstetrician being like, no, there's still nothing. You just, you know, baby's just so not engaged, like he is so high up, like like they just had this huge watermelon, like way up high, and I've always heard of people being like, oh, have you dropped yet, or you know, oh, she's definitely dropped, you know, like that means the baby's coming. There was no dropping whatsoever in my belly. It was so high. So it was just a bit weird, but I guess just had to keep doing what I was doing at home. Like, honestly, I ate two pineapples. I had hot curries all the time for dinner. Heaps of raspberry leaf tea.
All the things.
All the things. Yeah. Even ventured out and doing some curb walking in level four lockdown. Like,
nice.
Looking like a crab on the side of the road. Like, it was so funny. But yeah, no, honestly, nothing worked. So it was just ridiculous. And then finally we went, back to the obstetricians, and now we're 41 weeks and I just was at my wit's end, I think.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty impatient person. So Ben had to stay in the car, and I went in, and everyone's in like full PPE gear,
yeah,
and masks and gloves and all that sort of thing, and went in there and finally got to have my 38-week scan, which was now at 41 weeks, just to see, yeah, how big the baby actually was and what he was doing and that sort of thing. So had the scan, and the amazing sonographer was like, wow. he's very large.
Yeah.
Her estimate was 10 pounds 10.
Oh, wow. Big baby.
Yeah, big baby. And I just remember being like, holy heck.
Yeah.
And I think I just started like crying. And,
yeah.
and I think it just made it so hard because Ben wasn't there, yeah, you know, and in those like final stages, it was just, yeah, really crappy to kind of hear that, like, whoa, it's a really big baby and he's not engaged at all. So, you know, like what should the next steps be? And it was really hard to make those next steps without him, you know,
yeah,
in person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the sonographer was like, yeah, definitely talk to the obstetrician and just she'll guide you in the right way. So luckily the clinic is in the same place. So the sonographer and the obstetricians are in the same, under the same roof. So just went across the hall and spoke to the obstetrician, and she was like, okay, how are you feeling about this? And I just said, I don't think I'm in the right mind frame to have a natural,
yeah,
vaginal birth with such a big baby. And she was like, well, I agree. And, I'll, you know, totally back you for whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And she actually said that he's posterior. So birthing first time, I think, first time posterior and a huge baby is,
yeah,
is not easy. And her guidance and her kind of final recommendation was to have an elective cesarean.
Yeah.
So, again, I was really cool with that. Like I just said, yep, I feel very anxious about everything as it is. So I'd rather just have that plan set, yeah, in place, and I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so from there, did they give you like a date? Because I think you said you're already getting close to 41, so
yes.
What was the plan in terms of dates, and I guess also from a COVID perspective, what was the plan, or what did they tell you about your partner being there, and yeah, what were the sort of rules around that?
Yeah, so I called Ben like straight away, and he's just sitting outside in the car park, and
yeah,
I just said, oh my god, babe, he's 10 pounds 10. He's posterior.
Yeah.
Do you know what that means? And he was just like, oh my God, get a C-section, like get it today, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just really, we can't have that. Like, it's just, yeah, let's do C-section. So I just said to her, like I was still in her room, and yeah, I hung up the phone and I said, yeah, we're on board for a C-section. And she was like, cool, I'll call North Shore Hospital and we'll see what we're looking, what they're looking like this week, and we'll get you a slot. And so I kind of just left it up to her, and she'd call me when she found an appointment, I guess, a free spot. And so they had said kind of like maybe that 40 weeks when I went for my last stretch and sweep, they had said that birth care was closed and that no, because of COVID, no one was allowed to go for birth care. And I think that really rocked me. Like that was going to be like the safe zone and the place where you can really bond as a family, and you know, just those amazing nurses and midwives that help.
Yeah. Do you mean like the transfer from hospital to birth care?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So there'd been all these kind of like murmurs about how if you're birthing at a hospital, you can't go anywhere else afterwards. You have to go straight home. And by then we'd heard that there's no one allowed in with you until you are in active labor. So, yeah, so we kind of had that in the back of my mind, and then we'd heard that you can't go to birth care, and it was just all this uncertainty around it. But we actually, I think the day that we said that we'll have a C-section, Ben actually called Warkworth Birth Care to kind of get clarification around it all, and they were like, no, no, we're up and running, like once you're here you have to stay here, so dads or birthing partners aren't actually allowed to leave. Which was awesome. We thought that's going to be really great, so we were stoked that we could actually go. So
Awesome. And so what sort of happened from there? Do you want to take us through preparing for your elective C-section and take us through those next couple of days?
Okay, so I went home that day. It was actually my birthday, which is also Ben's birthday. So we share a birthday, and that was the day that we decided to have the C-section. We went home and had our lockdown birthday together, and then went to bed absolutely fine, and was still waiting for the call from the obstetrician as to when it was going to be. She kind of just said it'll be this week for sure. We just need to be very cautious with COVID and don't want to like overflow the hospital, basically. And electives at North Shore Hospital are done on a Tuesday. So she was like, we're really fully booked for tomorrow. I know that, but I'll try and get you a spot later in the week. So we were like, okay, cool. That's all good. So went home, had our lockdown birthday, and then the next morning I was in bed asleep, and I could just feel this warm water, like all over me down there. And I woke up and was like, oh my God, I'm peeing myself. And I just like kind of just jumped out of bed, as you can at 41 weeks. And this huge gush of water just fell out, like splat on the ground, and my waters broke. And we were like, oh my God, oh my God. It was just like the movies, eh? And Ben's like running around trying to get towels, and it was pretty chaotic. And then he called the obstetrician clinic, and was like, holy shit, Alice is in labor, and we're having a C-section, but we don't know when it is. Like, what are we going to do? And they were like, oh no, you've picked the wrong day to have it. Like, it's all the electives are happening today. It's so busy. But we will see her this afternoon. So she'll have the last slot later today. So just kind of like sit tight and don't eat anything from now. So we were like, oh God, okay. And then we kind of, so that was 8 o'clock on the dot. And then I think Ben called her again as to like what we should do. And she was like, cool, you can come in at 11, but Ben is not allowed anywhere near the hospital. So he needs to drop you at the door. Not allowed to come in, and and then we'll call him when you're ready to have the C-section. So we kind of just got, my bag was packed and all that stuff. So we just got into the car and drove straight to hospital. And yeah, Ben dropped me at the front door, which was really, really sad. Mm. It was pretty hard to go in there on my own and just have that huge anxiety of just like, what am I doing? Where am I going? And also I'm still leaking. So waddling around with the towel. Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking saying goodbye to him and just not knowing like when he was coming back. And
yeah,
it was a little bit scary. So, but honestly, the midwife who came down to meet me at the door was wonderful and really warm and kind. So she just kind of escorted me up to the birthing area and kind of got ready for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what sort of happened from there? Did Ben wait in the car or did he go home? And I guess when was he allowed in? And then do you want to take us through the birth of your baby boy?
Yep. So he left, he went home. So they kind of, I was dropped off at 11 a.m. and just went straight up to the birthing unit and got prepped for the C-section. So they were awesome, really lovely. And I think they'd done about 3 weeks of level four now.
Yeah.
So they kind of had health systems in place and they were like, cool, your partner will be here this afternoon when we're ready to go down to theatre. And we'll call him and he'll have enough time to get all his gear ready and, you know, be ready for that. So they were really like clear and concise with what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, within about 15 minutes of me arriving there and being in that room, my contraction started. Just contracting for, I think, the next 3 hours. I had some gas, which was incredible. They were just talking to me and while I was contracting, so it was pretty bizarre to not have been there through that.
Yeah.
And how I visioned my birth to be, I always thought that he would be there right there.
Yeah.
And breathing through contractions and, you know, that sort of thing. So that was a bit strange, and a little bit hard, but the nurses were fully supportive and I think aware that all these mums were doing it on their own. So they were pretty good. And then all of a sudden it's 2 o'clock and, they called Ben and they were like, cool, we are ready to go. So he arrived and got all dressed up in his scrubs and his little hat. And, we got wheeled down to theatre. And I remember getting that spinal injection and just getting like this wave of relief.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, this feels so good.
Yeah. And just sorry, Alice, were you wearing a mask and was Ben, or what was the go there?
No, we were the only ones that were not wearing masks.
Okay.
So everyone else was in masks and PPE.
Yep.
So some people had those face shields, some people didn't. They just had normal masks.
Yeah, okay.
But Ben and I were completely mask-free.
Yeah, okay.
Which cool. I think honestly helped a lot. Just so that for us it was just like we were just normal, you know? So went down, had the spinal, and then went into the actual theatre and it was incredible in there. Honestly, they were so relaxed and chilled out. I remember them just chatting about Uber Eats and how how we can't get Uber Eats in level four lockdown. And yeah, just they had music playing and it was just so chill. Like it's not how I thought it was gonna be, and maybe because it was an elective, I kind of had 24 hours to know that, you know, and come to terms with that's what was going to happen. Yeah, it was really, really nice in there.
And we
actually brought down Ben's phone and he was allowed to just kind of snap away at some cool photos of the actual cesarean. So
yeah, awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool to see that later. Yeah,
cool. And so Leo was born, and did he cry, and how big was he, and yeah, what sort of happened from there?
Yeah, so he was born just after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he screamed like so loudly. They were just like, whoa, here he is. And they held him up so I could see him, and then they took him over to the side, got him cleaned up, and brought him over. He was on my chest straight away. And I just remember looking at him just like, wow, you are so huge.
Yeah.
And ginger. And really hairy. So he actually was 10 pounds 4 ounces.
Yeah.
So a little bit less than 10 pound 10, but still close enough. Yeah, still big boy. And he actually had a umbilical hernia.
Okay.
So huge, huge, huge belly and like this protruding purple wobbly belly button. Yeah.
Okay.
And they honestly were not concerned about it at all. They were just like, this is actually quite common. There's nothing to worry about, and once you're all set up, we'll get a pediatrician to come and visit you and have a look at his hernia, but
yeah,
it looks fine to us. Yeah, so yeah, that was cool. And then we got wheeled out of theatre and got put into that kind of like waiting area post
recovery surgery. Kind of
recovery room. Yep, that's right. And we had.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think it was like two amazing nurses come and just check up on Leo and me and just to make sure everything's okay, and did lots of family photos there. And we were in there for about 45 minutes just I guess looking at Leo, and that's when they got him to latch. And so Ben could be there for that, which was awesome. And yeah, we were just kind of in that crazy euphoric in love bubble that you are when they arrive. So yeah, it was really cool. And then yeah, at about I think 45-50 minutes, they were like, cool, okay Ben, it's time to go. Which is really hard. That was really sad when he had to go. Yeah, it was really difficult. And I just remember getting wheeled away from him and him just standing in the hallway, seeing him down the hall, just waving at us was really, really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, back up in the room, it was pretty. You know what it's like. It's just a whirlwind of emotions,
yeah.
And you just stare at this little thing that just makes it all better. Yeah,
yeah. And so, what was your sort of plan with Ben? I guess was he just going to go home and then try to call you guys? And like, yeah, I guess from a communication perspective, what were you guys trying to do to keep in touch?
Yeah, so FaceTime was just amazing.
Yeah.
I think I would call him, like, honestly, every, like, 2 hours and just be like, look at your baby.
Yeah.
He's so cute. Yeah, so heaps and heaps of FaceTime when Ben got home. I think it was just so sad for him because he wasn't going home to his mates or his family.
Yeah.
He couldn't talk to anyone. He went home on his own, you know? Yeah. So that was really sad. Like, I think it hurt me a lot more than it hurt him because I was worried about him.
Felt sad for him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just felt really empathetic for him and how he would be feeling. But honestly, I called him so many times and just showed him Leo.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was fine. And we actually chose Leo's name on FaceTime. So we'd had two names and we just couldn't decide between the two. And then in that 45 minutes that we were together after Leo's birth, we didn't even talk about it. We were just like so in love with this little guy. And so then he got home and I was like, babe, what are we going to call him? So it was quite cool. That's a moment that will always, I know, be stuck in my mind. That, his name was chosen on FaceTime.
And I guess from, like, obviously you can look back and sort of reflect on it now and clearly is still like a sort of raw spot. And even, you know, I hear you talk about that and just like all the emotions for me too. So I'm wondering, when you reflect on it now, is there anything that would have made it like easier or different or better for you or for Ben, knowing that he was going home like on his own and that you guys would have to stay in the hospital without him?
To make it better, I would have like somehow set up like a Zoom call or something. And just told all his mates to call and like done like something fun or you know how guys get together and they do the wet the head or you know, all that sort of thing. Like maybe have set that up for him. Just so that he had that support. I do know that his friends, they called him. They definitely did. So, you know, and obviously our families are super supportive. So the group chats were just going off. And every photo that I sent Ben, he would circulate. So he was in contact with everyone. And so I knew that he wasn't sitting at home, you know, in silence, you know. But yeah, no, nothing else that I guess could make it have been different. We'd always known that in those weeks leading up to the birth that fathers or birth partners would have to leave, so we knew that. It just, I guess when you're in the moment, it just takes over. But we also knew that soon we'll be reunited, and also that at birth care, because of COVID, they weren't letting the fathers leave or the birth partners leave. So we were just like, right, we just need to get through this hospital stage and then get to birth care, and then we'll just be this little unit. And we'll stay for as long as we need and then we'll go home, you know?
So
that was kind of like our thing that was holding us together or giving us a bit of hope, you know?
Yeah. And so how long did you end up staying in the hospital for, and then what happened from there?
So I actually stayed in hospital for 2 nights, and that was only because there weren't enough beds up at Warkworth Birth Care.
Oh, yeah.
So the obstetrician came and saw me, and she was like, "I'd love to let you go now after the 1 night. You're fine to go, but you would have to go home, and then you're not allowed to then go on to birth care." So it's like a once you leave the hospital, it's one or the other. So I really knew that we needed to go to birth care. I just really, really wanted to go. So I made the call to stay another night. Which was tough because obviously it's a whole nother night without Ben, without seeing him. But I'm so glad that we did because birth care was just the answer to what we needed. So that was it was pretty tough being in hospital. And also the day that Leo decided to come was a Tuesday, and it was the elective day, and there were actually 30 newborns born
Oh my gosh.
in the 24 hours that we
Holy
had
hell.
made, that we'd made the call to have the C-section. So from that Monday to the Tuesday, 30 newborns
Wow.
were on the ward, and the nurses and midwives were so like exhausted and run off their feet. And honestly, it was like dashing from room to room because there were no support persons around. So that honestly, it made it really difficult. I felt like I was just constantly ringing the bell, like, "Please come and see me because I can't lift the baby. I can't walk." This is when I still had a catheter up there, so I couldn't do anything. It was pretty tough. But I get it. I understand why, it was so exhausting for them because there was no one else to help, no one could change nappies, it was all the mums were on their own in their rooms.
And so I guess leaving there would have probably felt like a little bit of a relief knowing that you were going to birth care. So do you want to talk us through your stay in birth care and how long you were there for and what sort of happened from there?
Birth care was just honestly a godsend. Like, they were just angels in there and so caring and nurturing, and every single thing that I needed in those first like raw days. And I think especially because Ben hadn't been around and I'd felt so isolated and alone at hospital, that being there was just awesome. Every single time it was time to feed Leo, there would be a midwife there, like just hand expressing me and all those wonderful things, and trying to just teaching us. And it was awesome, honestly. They were there to teach us how to bath Leo, and even let us go for a walk around the garden, and be minding Leo while we were walking. And it was just so caring. And yeah, it was amazing. I'm so thankful that there is a facility like that, and it's free for New Zealand women, because it's just amazing. I couldn't speak highly enough for it.
Awesome. Cool. And what happened, I guess, from there for you guys? So you obviously take your little guy home and start your life as a family of three. And what were those next couple of weeks like for you guys?
Yeah, so took Leah home and we're still in level four lockdown, which was actually really nice because there was no pressure and didn't have to get out of my pajamas if I didn't want to, and didn't have to clean the house for visitors, that sort of thing. So yeah, it was quite nice to be in level four in those initial first few days. I remember driving home from Warkworth and going past my parents' house, and which was really naughty. But we obviously all stayed in the car and we just waved from the car and they stood on the driveway like, oh my God, there's our first grandchild. So super emotional and super super tough to see them crying, from behind the glass door, but all making memories and that sort of thing. So yeah, just took him home and I guess got to know him and yeah, just heal from my C-section and just take it easy in that first week. And then yeah, that's when all kind of the magic of a newborn started. yeah, and he, I guess week two, honestly, Leo just turned into such a different baby, like that we'd had at Warkworth. He really woke up, like he was just like this alert, eyeballs, like pinging eyeballs. Yeah, just super kind of alert and quite an intense baby, so heaps and heaps of crying. Yeah, which kind of eventuated and turned into colic and just screaming and screaming episodes. So that was really, really tough. And that was, yeah, from about week two, the screaming would just go on for hours. Which was really hard. Yeah, and I remember, so the obstetrician team, once you have the baby, you get assigned a midwife to come to your house. And yeah, we had this midwife, and she basically was like, yep, he's just super windy. You've got a really windy baby. And kind of just gave me a bit of tips and help and, sort of things that I could be doing, but basically just strap in for the ride, and it's a phase, it'll pass, it'll get better. And man, it was tough. Like he just screamed and screamed and screamed. And yeah, I just remember like 2 o'clock in the morning, just he was still going, and we were just taking shifts of like how to calm this baby down. And it was like this cycle. So I'd feed him, and then he was just gulping so much air. And so then the bubbles would just get trapped. And then, so like it was just this ongoing thing. Like, oh my goodness, the only way to calm him down was to feed him. But then he would get bubbles, and oh, it was just so hard. yeah, but man, yeah, so I guess. The first couple of weeks were super, super rough. My breastfeeding journey, it wasn't great. Looking back at it, I honestly feel like it was just that whole beginning, like how we started, with Leo. And I had heaps of anxiety about the lockdown and giving birth without Ben and all that sort of thing. I think I just carried it, I carried it with me, and breastfeeding was just not what I thought it was going to be. I, I've heard or seen or friends have spoken to me about breastfeeding and how you just get this most intense bond with your baby and how it's so beautiful, and all that sort of yummy stuff.
Yeah.
I just remember being like, this is awful. Like, yeah. Oh my God. Like, I just had this huge knot in my stomach every time it was time to feed Leo. I just remember sitting in the nursing chair and just crying my eyes out, just being like, this isn't what I pictured. This is not, it just doesn't feel right. And it's so hard to explain that, that it was just causing me so much, angst and, sadness. Yeah. Like it's really hard to explain. It just wasn't the right thing for me, and it was making me really sad, and the baby blues were just huge, just completely taking over. It was just not right. And I remember speaking to my mum about breastfeeding and just saying to her, you know, I'll do it till 3 months. Like, I'll do the first 12 weeks and then I'm switching to formula. And she was just like, why would you put yourself through all that? You know, to get to a certain point, just do it now. Like, who are you trying to, who are you doing it for? You know, the most important person is you, because a happy mum is a happy baby. And, and if you're not okay, then the whole family are not okay. So, you know, let's switch now. And oh my God, I'll be so completely grateful forever for her to just say that to me, that it's okay to not feel that, you know, it's not right, or, you know, like it's okay to switch. And honestly, the day that I started feeding Leo formula was the day I just fell in love with him. It was incredible. My whole mind frame changed. I felt like a different person. I felt, it was just incredible. Like, it was actually a complete change for me.
Cool. And I guess from there, I remember reading in your email that you've been trying for baby number two. And I guess I'd love you to take us through the journey to deciding that you want to have another baby and how things have gone from there.
Yeah, so I guess when Leo was about 9 months old, we were kind of like, we could totally have another baby. all that newborn stuff had kind of gone, and we're really settling into this yummy, scrummy, cute bub, and he was sleeping through the night, and we were just, just felt
living
like
the dream.
We were actually living the dream as parents, and it was just so cool. Like, we were sweet with it. About 9 months, we were like, we should start trying again. I mean, the first time was an absolute fluke. Who knows how long it'll take this time. Let's just get going. And we started trying and got my period, and I was like, okay. Totally fluke the first time then, obviously. And then the next month got my period again, third month period again, and then fast forward to 8 months of trying and still no baby. So honestly, everyone, all my mates were just like, you just need to relax.
Relaxing word.
Just chill, you know. You were completely blessed with a one-hit wonder when you got pregnant. You know, not everyone gets pregnant on their first time, and it'll happen when it's going to happen. And I was like, yep, you guys are right. I know, I totally get it. But I am an impatient person, and I want to know. I totally want to know what's happening, and can I be doing something different, or is it me, or is it Ben, or, you know, like, what's going on? And so I actually made a call to Fertility Associates.
Yeah.
Which was so easy. I thought that you actually had to be referred by your GP, but I just looked up their number, Googled it, and called them and was like, hi. And I just explained our situation. I've had a baby. I had a C-section. And we've been trying for 8 months, and we're so super keen to have another baby. So kind of like, what can we do? And this amazing nurse on the other line was just like, you know, you haven't been trying for that long. But what you could do is go get your partner's sperm tested. And then after that, we could even get you an appointment here, and you can have a chat to one of the doctors. So, did Ben's sperm test, and absolutely flying colours, like, all good in that department. And so I just called again and was like, yep, cool, I'm ready to come in. And so made an appointment and spoke to this incredible doctor, who was kind of just like, honestly, on paper, you two should have a baby by now. Mm. There is nothing underlying. You know, Alice, you're absolutely fine. You've had a baby before. Your body knows exactly what to do. Ben, you're all good. Like, let's, you know, you should definitely have a baby. So let's have a look at what's going on the inside. And so he actually did a ultrasound, and had a look, got it up on the big screen, and, you know, even told me that my right ovary ovulated that month. Like, super, just like, everything is working here, like, you're all good. And then he went over my C-section scar and was like, bingo, there it is. And I was like, what do you mean? There's what? Like, what are you talking about? And he was like, yep, just what I thought it was going to be. And I was like, what? What? And he said, you've got a C-section scar defect. And it's basically where the C-section scar is, the incision, it's created a hole or a sac. On like the inside, so in my uterus, and basically what it does is every month when I have my period, it fills with menstrual blood,
right?
And I guess it creates like a stagnant area, and it just slowly trickles that blood out. And what that does for your uterus is creates a hostile environment, which were his words, and that the egg that gets released every month, it just kind of just says, I don't want to be in here. Like, it's not a safe zone. I'm not even going to fertilize anything, so it just releases itself every month. And the sperm also just, I guess, die or disintegrate, or nothing really goes on in there. So I was like, wow, okay, this is strange. I've never ever heard of this before. He actually called it, there's a scientific name, like an isthmocele or something like that. But yeah, it's a C-section scar defect. And I just said to him, how does this happen? And he was like, it's one of two things. You either didn't heal correctly, So doing too much, lifting, vacuuming, you know, that sort of thing. Just overdoing it in the healing process of my cesarean. So it was either then or it was a stitching malfunction. Mm-hmm. So he used to do C-sections, and he said back in the day we used to do two layers of stitching, and now it's acceptable and perfectly fine to just do one layer. So it could be that your mm-hmm. body just needed two, or, you know, something like that, or but we can't pinpoint that. We can't fault anyone. It's just here. Yep. It just happened. It's here, and this is how we're going to deal with it. So I basically was like, right, what do we do? And he just said, you're going to need to go to the hospital and we need a second opinion. So you're going to have to go get a HSG exam done.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they just inflate a balloon up there and insert some dye.
Yep.
And then we're just going to see where the dye goes to. We want to see it filling that sac in your new uterus. And then we're going to measure how big it is and take some photos and just that sort of thing.
Mm.
And then once we've done that, then we will do a surgery to sew it back up. And so that there's no hole, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Sew you back up, and then you're going to have to wait for 3 months until you can start trying again.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I was like, okay, cool. We've got a plan. It's pretty crap that this has happened, but I'm so glad that we went and kind of just took matters into our own hands, basically, and was like, right, what's going on?
Yeah.
And so glad we have answers now so that we can just get on with it.
Yeah.
But once again, COVID strikes.
Yeah, God, bloody COVID.
And then my appointment for the hospital to get the dye inserted was on Wednesday last week, which was the first day of lockdown. So they called me and they were just like, we're really sorry, but we're not doing those sorts of tests. The whole bodily fluid stuff does not cover under level 4, so we're not allowed to see you. So, and the tricky part about these tests is that they can only be done while you have your period. So you have such a short window. So you have to call on the first day of your period and tell them that you're ready to go, and then it's just basically a lottery of when, because everyone else is calling, right, to get these things. And and now with lockdown, it's just going to be a bit of a bigger backlog. So a bit crappy, but so good to know that. And like how is this a thing? Like, I just, no one that I know of. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
But now I am so deep down into Google.
I bet you are.
Oh my God. I'm like, I've joined this C-section scar defect Facebook group. Who, no one is from New Zealand in it. So they're all people from like Brazil or like America, and they're all just women sharing their stories of that they tried and tried and tried for like 2 years, 3 years trying to get pregnant after having a C-section and couldn't. And
now they know why.
Now they know why. Yes. It's just mind blowing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that there's no information about it. And what kind of makes me angry is that at your 6 week postpartum checkup, which I only had at 11 weeks because of because of COVID, sorry.
Yeah.
They didn't do a scan. They just kind of asked me how everything was going and how I was feeling and how breastfeeding was. There was nothing like, you've just had major abdominal surgery. Let's have a look and let's do a C-section. Let's just do a ultrasound to check that everything's healed. And I honestly feel like that should just be how it is. They should be checking people who have had C-sections.
Yeah, so interesting. And bloody COVID, I really hope that, hope for your sake, that we're not in here for too long and you get everything underway. But it's been so interesting talking to you, Alice, and I just, I'm super grateful that you were willing to come on the podcast and share your story, because I think there's a whole heap in there that will help other women. And who knows, maybe there'll be someone else out there who's had a C-section and is having a similar issue and thinks that could be something that's happening to them. And I just super grateful that you were willing to share, so thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Jordan. It was awesome. Really cool.
No worries.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. And if you are a mum who's due to give birth soon and you're currently in lockdown and feeling anxious, I hope that you find something in this story that gives you a little bit of comfort. It's not a nice time to be thinking about giving birth or being pregnant, or, you know, there's just so many different situations that different families are in, and my heart goes out to all of you. So I hope you're doing okay. Sending you all my love, and I look forward to bringing you another episode next week. So thank you for tuning in, and I will talk to you all soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.